Hello and welcome to Writing Home. It's Monday, 22nd December. It's 2 p.m. on my clock, and you are listening to Writing Home on Satellite Skies at 3CR 855 a.m. This and every following segment will be recorded on Wurundjeri Wyvern country. We pay our respects to the original owners of this land, the Wurundjeri Wyvern people, as well as their elders, past, present, and emerging. Writing Home is about writers who have more than one home, many homes, and are realizing so many more. Once a month at Writing Home, I, Madhvi, will be sharing space with writers of color, discussing their unique but collective writing processes, navigating home, life, and love. This episode is part of Writing Home's summer series, revolving around the lives of migrant sex workers in so-called Australia. This time, we'll be airing three episodes produced at Race Matters FBR Radio that document the experience of migrant sex workers, followed by two episodes featuring readings of sex work literature, articles, and an interview with migrant support worker B. Charika from Vixen about their experience in ongoing advocacy and projects.
Race matters.
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 This audio series is recorded on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri Wai Wurrung people of the Kulin Nations and is being broadcasted on the unceded Gadigal land. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. You're listening to Race Matters. This is a show that explores the values and complexities of race, culture and identity. I'm Jasmine Ratkirani, coming to you from Naam. This is We Speak Clearly, the second episode of a three-part series commissioned and supported by Race Matters. This episode is in the loving memory of our beloved friend Venus. We invite Natasha to share a few words remembering her.
Venus was a brightening light of the brothel. She used to arrive at our workplace always with a beautiful smile and bringing amazing vibes. Everyone loved her. She had passion for life. She was a dreamer, like many of us. We used to laugh really hard, and we were here together as the only family we have far away from home. Our friends are our family. The journey is not always easy and sometimes can beat you really hard. On May 21st of last year, our beloved friend Venus left us. I will never understand why, and I have come to understand that I need to let go of trying to make sense why she had to leave us. While we all carry the pain of Venus' loss with us, we can also take comfort in the fact that she is free from pain now, and hopefully she found the peace she was looking for.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this audio series are by migrant sex workers of color, who speak for themselves and not for the entire community. We do not take responsibility for how the audience perceives us or our stories because we are not here to please. We are a work in progress, and our thoughts, views, and opinions are subject to change. We do not intend to hurt anyone's feelings. Your feelings are your responsibility. What are the words that come to you when you think of a migrant sex worker? Submissive, subservient, uneducated, unaware,
third world mentality,
not cool enough,
hard to talk to,
poor communication skills,
unhygienic,
smells like
modesty,
curry,
is patriarchy,
comes from countries of rape culture,
too nice,
she only gets booked because she's Asian,
a fetish,
exotic,
someone with an accent,
poor communication skills,
junky,
false,
lies about where she comes from,
a country of slums,
no experience,
politically incorrect,
she only talks about India.
Do you think your husband will enjoy you after all this?
No,
people from other countries don't know how to respect our boundaries.
They get married young.
She's loud.
She looks very straight to
She's
me.
She's intrusive.
You must love
Someone
the money.
Docile.
To-do lists complete.
Slept
they
with
just
an
don't
Indian
know how
girl.
To adjust
she only
or assimilate.
Ever eats Indian food.
Is your price same as the white girls?
White men go for them because they know they don't have a
they
chance
all carry
with us.
Trauma and are abusive.
White women struggle too.
You are very independent for an Indian
women
girl.
Women like them will teach us what standards we should have.
Do you do this for money?
You're so brave to do sex
Indian
work.
Women don't do sex
A girl
work.
Like you
will
shouldn't
marry
be
a white
here.
Man for a citizenship.
Can you shorten your name for me?
Why are you not out as a sex worker?
Are you ashamed
You're
to be
not
one?
Like us.
I don't know how to talk to them.
Can we all speak English here?
If you can't afford to live here, go back
if
to where
you can
you
afford
from.
To come here.
I'm sure you can afford to live back home.
You
too.
Must be very privileged to come here.
Everyone
and study.
Is equal.
Everyone struggles.
Natasha Moreno is a 37-year-old Brazilian migrant sex worker of color. She has been working in the sex industry for over 5 years, spending the first 3 years in a brothel before becoming a private escort for the last 2 years. When Natasha came to Australia as a migrant, she had a tough time adjusting to a new country because she didn't speak much English. Finding a job and fitting in at a new workplace made her journey even harder. Natasha talks about her experiences as a sex worker, sharing how it has affected her life. She talks about the challenges she faced and the moments when she felt strong and empowered. Apart from her work, Natasha takes care of her elderly parents in Brazil. Juggling the responsibility of supporting her family while working hard as a student and sex worker in Australia shows her dedication. Natasha's story dives into her journey, touching on her identity, migration, and work in Melbourne's sex industry. Her tale is one of resilience, growth, and determination. In this episode, Natasha lets listeners in on her life as a Brazilian migrant sex worker. She shares the ups and downs that have shaped her path, inviting others to understand the complexities of her journey. What is the most pressing issue you'd like to talk about in the Australian sex industry?
I think for me is the sense of responsibility that immigrants must have. We have to work, pay bills, help our family. We pay expensive university fees. We pay for our visas and so many other things. But at the same time, we have a lot of things to do. We are full of, because of university, we are full of assignments to do with very tight deadlines. Also, we have to study for our exams. And for example, if you fail one subject at uni, you might end up paying an extra $6,000. And not only that, we might also have visa issues because of that. Because, for example, if you fail a subject, the university, they will contact you like, oh, Natasha, what's going on? We might have to report you for immigration. And they're not joking. It works exactly like this because our visa is based on studies, right? So if university thinks that we are not taking it seriously, then it's their role to report to immigration. So we are also very scared about that. We might get in trouble, you know? So on top of all that pressure, we are also very homesick. We think about our family all the time. My parents are very old. My grandma, she's got Alzheimer's. So every time we have a family group on WhatsApp, so every time I get a message, my heart beats fast because I'm like, I hope it's just a good morning message or something like that because we are always worried, right? Also, we don't have many friends we can share our routines with because we basically lie to everyone about our jobs. Some friends would just not understand, you know what I mean? So, yeah, we are very busy dealing with our emotions, you know, homesick. We need to make money. We need to study. We don't even have time to cry because we are like doing our sex work one night and few hours later we are going to uni because we have a lecture in the morning. Sometimes we didn't even sleep. So, yeah, and something that pisses me off sometimes is like, while we are having all these issues, we, you know, at the brothel, I remember, you know, the locals, they don't have the sensibility of understanding our journey sometimes. I'm not blaming anyone, but I would like them to be more empathetic to us. Because while I'm struggling with all of that, I know everyone, every person struggles with something, right? But I sense that they don't realize how hard is our journey in here. Because when I, at the brothel, for example, I remember like being so tired. I was finishing a booking and then I had to go to a lecture. I didn't sleep. And then these girls, the locals, right? They're like complaining about very simple things like, oh, how come they don't put cheese? There's no cheese in the fridge. How come complaining about small things? So, yeah, it's just very different from our journey.
What was life like in Brazil?
Life back in Brazil before I came to Australia was, I was very happy over there. I think Brazilian people in general, and despite of the poverty, we sort of grow up with a lot of, you know, we try to convert this bad social scenario with happiness. We are naturally very happy. And we are very sociable. We have so many friends. We go to parties. We have the carnival. For us, any tiny little thing is a matter of celebration. Brazilian people in general are really, really sociable and happy. And being this way, we sort of, we don't want to feel the bad things around us, right? So, yeah, and yeah, I never felt alone in Brazil because, as I said, we have this very strong sense of community, and unfortunately, I don't. It's something that's like in Australia, I don't have as much because I do have a lot of friends in here, but. In Brazil, they are my people, my community. So it's a different feeling, you know, you always feel like, no matter what, it doesn't, they will always be there protecting you. They'll fight for you. And we always supporting each other. The sense of community is really, really strong in Brazil. And yeah, we are very happy, always doing things. And yeah, so I never felt alone over there. And life wasn't easy for me, but I never felt alone, if you know what I mean. So my family, we were very poor. And I didn't have money to go to uni, for example. So my family, what they did, they, all of them, my grandparents, aunties, uncles, everyone put a little bit of money into my uni fees so I could go to uni. But still, you have to pay for transportation, for, you know, you need to buy clothes, you need to buy food. So you can't go to uni and not work. So my life in Brazil was really, really busy. And yeah, so, but once I finished uni, life started to get a bit better for me. And then I got better jobs. I was working in an office. And yeah, so life started to get better, but was always like never, I could never afford just to study.
How is life different now? Do you miss home?
I do miss home. I miss my family all the time. I think about them all the time. And if I compare life before coming to Australia and now, the main thing I can think of is like how my family now, they're doing a bit better, but like we were very poor. So I always remember those moments where we couldn't afford few things. I remember this time when I was having dinner with my family. So we only had a can of tuna to share with for four people, me, my sister, mom, and dad. And I always appreciated. Now, looking back, I realize how my mom, how strong she was, because she made us feel like that can of tuna was amazing. Like, oh, we have rice and we have a can of tuna. Like, she always made us feel like that was fantastic. It was amazing. Look, we have this tuna. And then we had just a tiny bit of tuna for each person. And I didn't realize the poverty. And a few years later, I started think about, oh, that was pretty bad, right? Like, and anyway, few other situations where, like, I remember my mom, she was craving for cheese. And I remember going with her to the grocery shop. And then I remember her seeing the price of the cheese, or anyway, like very cheap stuff, but still she didn't buy the cheese because we couldn't afford. So if I compare my life now, my life is a lot better because I am very wealthy now, and I'm very thankful to the sex industry. I'm pretty sure I could have this life as well doing other jobs, but obviously with sex work it was a lot faster to get here, and I wouldn't say easier, but it was faster. So now, you know, if I compare, I feel like super wealthy. I do everything I want. I want to go to this restaurant, I go. I want to buy this expensive clothes, I buy. I want to do this, I want to do that. I go for I do Botox. However, I would imagine I would be able to afford those things. So now I live in an amazing apartment, not only because of the sex industry, but because of my hard work. And so now, even I feel whenever I, like the few days ago, I went to this amazing restaurant, and the food was, I went with a friend, right? And the food was so delicious, so amazing. But it was a very fancy place. I don't always do that, but whenever I do, I don't fully enjoy, which is sad, because whenever I am experiencing those things, like very good things, good food, lot of comforting things, at the same time, I feel a bit guilty because I feel like, oh my God, like, how is my family doing back home? I wish I could share this meal with them. They would love this. And, you know, so I was supposed to be there with the friends enjoying my meal, but all I can think of is about my family and how much I wanted them to be there with me and me being able to share these moments with them. So, yes, I miss my family every time, every moment, in everything I do. And all the food I eat, I always think of them. So, yeah, but I try to, you know, whenever I go home, I try to spend the very good quality time with them. And they never accept anything from me. They don't want anything. They always tell me, oh, Natasha, no, we don't need anything. You save for your future, you know, your life has just begun. So you save your money and your things for yourself. So I always have to force them to accept things from me. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But yes, I do miss home. And I think of them all the time.
How did you find yourself in the sex industry despite how people had treated you in other industries? Did you ever think of packing your bags and going back?
No, I never thought of giving up. Giving up was never an option for me because I promised to my family I would win, I would pursue my dreams. And of course, I had my moments of sadness. I cried a lot in my whole journey here in Australia, but I knew I would never give up. So talking about sex industry, when I first came to Australia, I was in Sydney, right? I had many jobs over there. The beginning was really hard because of the language barrier was really hard. I couldn't speak. So the beginning was really hard anyway. And then moving forward, I had many jobs over there, bad experiences, but also good experiences. My visa was about to expire anyway. I wanted to stay here. I wanted to do my master's here. But for us international students, the master's is really expensive. We pay a lot more as compared to locals, for example, domestic students, right? So anyway, it was really expensive. It was almost like $70,000 for the whole course. And I didn't have this money, and I was like, how can I pay for the course? The course would be the pathway for me to grow in my career. And, you know, this course was very important to me. So I was like, oh, I need to find a way, because the job I was doing here in Melbourne was nice. I don't remember how much they used to pay me. I think at that time it was probably $20 an hour, something like that. And how would I pay $70,000 for my master's, right? I was a bit panicking. I was like, I can't pay this. I can't even ask my family any money because they don't have money. Anyway, so I thought, okay, how can I make money, a good amount of money, and also really fast? the only way and legal way that came to my mind was doing sex work. But I was a bit scared because in my country, sex work is always related to like disease, drugs, and all of that. Also, I came from a Catholic family. So in my mind, if I was going to do sex work, I would become, it would be something wrong. You know what I mean? But anyway, I had no choice. So I was like, it's either doing this or just going back to Brazil without my master's. So I was like, no, I'm going to try this. And I decided to research about sex work in Victoria. And I don't remember the website, but there was a blog where this sex worker, she wrote everything about how to be a sex worker in Victoria. So in her blog, she was explaining that at that time we were supposed to do like a health check every 3 months. And anyway, in her blog she was explaining the different aspects of doing sex work in Victoria, and that blog was so helpful to me. I think because of that blog, because that girl shared her experience, it gave me courage to do it. I was like, oh, it doesn't sound very complicated or dangerous, so why not? I'll give it a try. And then I decided to Google the brothels around the city, right? And I had an interview with them, I think three different places. But I was very innocent. I was a girl that I only had 2 boyfriends. I didn't have much sex in my life, and I was very innocent. So the first place I went to have an interview, the guy, he was a man. The owner was a man, and then I didn't feel like he was very business oriented. And when I was there doing the interview, he didn't realize I was new to the industry. He didn't, you know, talk to me. He didn't, he was not very sensible. I don't know if that's the correct word, but he was very business oriented. So I went there for the interview and he said, oh, look, in here, half an hour is only one shot, and this is how much you, and this, and then, and he was very fast and very business oriented. For me, I didn't even know shot. What is shot? Shot? Like, for me, like a tequila shot, what is this, you know? So for me, I didn't understand the whole vibe. I didn't understand how things worked. He was really fast and I didn't understand. So I thought of giving up at that time. I was like, oh my god, I don't think this is for me. This is not for me, you know. But then I reminded myself, no, Natasha, you can't give up. If you want to do your master's, you need to try one more time. So I went to another brothel, and this other brothel, the manager was a woman, and she took me to a private room and we had a conversation. She took her time to explain to me everything. And then she asked me, have you ever done this before? I said, no. And then she was like, but are you sure you want to do that? I said, yes, I am. I'm sure. But anyway, I told her, because I was scared, right? In my mind, like, she was hiring me, and just like another job, and I didn't want to disappoint them, right? But then I asked her, okay, so what do you expect from me? Do I have to do everything? And then she explained to me, like, no, Natasha, in this industry, you only do what you want. So that's why we introduce the girls to the clients one by one. So every girl explains their services to the client. So you can tell the clients everything you offer. And if you don't want to do certain things, it's okay. You just need to tell them, look, I don't do this, blah, 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 blah. So this sort of gave me some comfort.
Why did you move to Australia from Brazil?
There are a few reasons why I came to Australia. Firstly, because I always wanted to learn English, and in Brazil was always hard for me to learn, because, you know, when you don't practice, it's very hard to learn. And when you have to work and do so many other things anyway, it's very hard. And I always had this desire of speaking English. And also for my work, my career, speaking English is very important. But also, I really wanted to have a better life. I wanted to, one day I want to be a mom, I want to have kids, I want to have a house. And I always thought in Brazil, for me to achieve this level of this lifestyle I wanted, would be very hard. Because in Brazil, it doesn't matter how hard you work, it's always hard to get there. You know what I mean?
Can you share your experience moving here and trying to find a job? Was it hard to find a job?
Yes, absolutely. So when I first came to Australia, I was very worried because I had to pay my rent and I didn't have much money left. So I was like, oh my God, I need to get a job very quick. And when I got here, I couldn't speak English very well. I could, you know, I would understand a basic conversation and speak very basic. So I struggled a lot to find a job. But anyway, eventually I got a job as a kitchen hand in a bakery. And the chef was also the owner of the bakery. And so, yeah, I was supposed to be the kitchen hands, but probably because my English wasn't the best, I end up cleaning bathrooms and doing a lot of stuff that no one wanted to do it. And I remember because he was also the owner, right? So he would watch me absolutely everything I was doing. He wanted zero waste, you know, like he wanted me to work every second because he was paying me by the hour, of course. And he wanted to make sure I was working every second of that hour. Also, I don't remember exactly how much I used to get per hour, but I remember it was the lowest of the lowest rates. So it was pretty bad. I could barely pay my rent and afford food. But anyway, for me, I was happy because that's the only job I got because I couldn't speak English, right? I remember because he used to rush me he wanted me to work very fast, work a lot very fast. And I was supposed to make the, because we used to make meat pie, and I was making the filling for the pie, right? And he was like, Natasha, quick, very quick. You're taking a long time. And I trust me, I'm not lazy. I was already super fast. Because you don't need any English for to, you know, chop onions, chop meat and make a pie filling. I knew what I was doing, right? And I was pretty fast. But still he wanted me to be very, very fast. And then I end up slicing one of my fingers. It was pretty bad. And so all my blood was spilled in the pies on the table and everything. And obviously it was very painful because my finger was, I was a piece of my finger was not there, right? So instead of him worrying about me, you know, maybe offering help to take me to the hospital or whatever, he screamed at me, say, "What the fuck you doing? Blah, blah. Look, the we have a line, clients, customers are lining up, and what the fuck you doing?" And at that moment, I didn't say anything because I was feeling that my finger was so painful, but at the same time, I was so scared of him. I said, I'm sorry. But then, anyway, when I got home, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, they can't treat me like this. Like, I am a person and my life and my health worth a lot more than this. So the next day, I went there just to tell him that I was not going to work for him anymore. And from that moment, I started to value myself and being stronger.
What did you do after you stood up for yourself and quit that job?
So when I quit that job, I was very scared. I was like, oh my God, I need to find another one, right? So anyway, after that, I had few other jobs. I even worked in factories. I did quite a few things, but and then the other job I had was the first customer service I had, pretty much. I was working for this company. It was a dry cleaning company. And so we used to work for, because I was working in Sydney at the time, and it was a big dry cleaning company. We used to work for Star Casino. It's a big casino in Sydney. But eventually they said, they were pretty nice to me. They were amazing. And they said, I'm very talkative. I love talking. I love people. And then my boss told me, oh, would you like to work in our shop? So the shop is where people drop off their stuff to be dry cleaned. So my role would be dealing with the customers and taking orders and being the cashier as well. And at that time, my English was a lot better. It was a lot easier for me to communicate. And I was pretty happy about it because I was like, oh, for the first time, I'll be able to talk to people and deal with people. I loved the idea, right? There's a story about when I started working with customer service, right? So I was working there for a few months already, And then my boss told me, look, Natasha, for some things, we don't have the price in the system. So let's say you get a garment or something that is very different or has a very different type of fabric. And if we don't have the price in the system, my boss said, look, I already trust you enough. I know you can price. You can put the price you think is fair for a particular thing we might not have in the system. She said, do you feel confident with that? I said, yeah, I feel confident because I already knew the system and the pricing and everything. So I knew like more delicate fabrics, we would charge a certain amount, or for if it's a big stuff, a certain amount. And I was already familiar with the pricing, right? Anyway, so one day this lady came to the shop and she had some cushions to get dry cleaned. And they had a very specific fabric. It was a very delicate fabric with some embroiderings and a very fancy one. And so we didn't have like the price in our system, in the computer, right? So my boss, and she told me, look, you can put the price you think is fair. Anyway, so I was like, okay, let me put some custom price for this. So when we do that, we need to enter in the system, in the computer, all the information about the product. So I was writing in the computer, oh, it's a cushion, and there's five of them, and this is the color, this is the texture of the fabric, everything, and this is the price. I put the price, I thought it was fair for that product. Anyway, so the lady agreed with the price. She said, yeah, that's fine. And I gave her the receipt. She paid for that. I gave her the receipt. And then she was walking away. And then she came back. She said, excuse me, what the fuck is this? What do you wrote in the receipt? What does that mean? I said, I was so scared. I was checking again the receipt, right? I was like, oh, what did I do? And I just misspelled cushion. So instead of C-U-S-H, I put C-A because I wasn't sure. I made a mistake, right? I thought it was cushion, but it's cushion. And instead of U, I put A. Anyway, I'm misspelling, right? And then she proceeded saying that, like, blaming me for being a stupid immigrant and what the fuck these people are doing in this country and, you know, screaming at me. And I was shaking. I was so scared. I was like, shit, I'm really enjoying my job. And what if I get fired, you know? And she kept telling me, calling me names and everything. And all of a sudden, my boss, who was at the back of the shop, she heard everything. And then she came and she said, Natasha, it's okay, you go inside and I'll deal with her. I went inside, but super scared of, you know, I thought, shit, I'm gonna get fired. anyway, so I was there because I was doing some other things while my boss was talking to her. And I heard my boss tell, my boss was a beautiful, amazing Indian woman. And she told the lady, look, we are all humans. Everyone makes mistakes. Natasha, she made a mistake, yes, but you can't treat her like this. In our store, we need respect to all the staff here and to everyone who works here. If you don't have respect, you're not welcome to come to our store anymore. And she deserves an apology You can't treat her like this. And I was inside listening to all of that. And now inside me, I was like, oh my gosh, she's not even angry. She's defending me. She's by my side. And, you know, and then I was so shocked, scared. Anyway, I went somewhere else to do something else. And then later, my boss came to me and she said, Natasha, look, never accept this kind of treatment from anyone, even from the store, from customers. No, you are a person who deserves respect. And you should never accept this sort of treatment. I said, thank you. She, for me, it was the biggest act of kindness I had. You know, someone defending me like this, I felt so, it was like a big hug, right? Because I was so scared. And then all of a sudden, everything changed for me. And it was like she gave me a big hug. She didn't give me a hug, but her behavior for me was like a hug, you know. And then I don't know after, I didn't hear the end of the conversation they had. But the next day, I got a call because I was supposed to take calls as well, right? And then I said, oh, hello, is the dry cleaning, blah, blah, blah. And then this lady said, hi, is this Natasha? I said, yes. Oh, Natasha, I'm the lady who came to the store yesterday. I'm calling just to apologize. Yesterday I was very nervous with few other things I had in my mind. And I treated you in a way that you didn't deserve, and I was very rude. I'm so sorry. I'm apologizing to you. And I said, no, that's okay. Thank you for your call. And that was it. But, you know, my boss, she taught me like the most beautiful lesson, a lesson in the most beautiful way. And this also made me feel so grateful to find support with other immigrants as well. Because my boss is also an immigrant, but she is such a strong woman. And she working with her made me be a little bit like her. And yeah, I'm so grateful to have met her and few other immigrants during my journey here in Australia. They always have supported me and made me feel stronger and better as a person. Yeah. And anyway, and then from that time, I obviously I had other jobs, but always standing for myself, never accepting disrespect. And yeah, so I'm very, very grateful for the people I met.
What advice would you give to other migrant sex workers of color? Something that they can learn from you?
I think the main thing is never give up your dreams. If you go for something, if you go for it, never give up. When I first started in the industry, I thought this was not for me. I thought, oh my God, how can I make money with all these beautiful white girls here, you know? And then, even though I had all this fear and insecurities inside me, giving up wasn't a choice for me. And look at me now. I finished my master's. I'm gonna do another course now. Everything is paid off. I bought an apartment in my home country. I helped my family. Life now is just exactly how I wanted it to be. And of course, the journey is not easy. you will find a lot of, how can I say in English? Like, it's not easy. You know, you'll find bad things on the way. But because we don't have family here, it's always good to feel the sense of community. You know, some people who have will be more understanding of our situation. Some people not because they just can't understand our reality. But some people do, and try to be with those who support you, support your journey. Because some people, they, for example, never been overseas, never been away from home. So they might not understand our reality. We came from a third world country, right? So our fight is a lot more difficult. And some people just don't understand that, and they won't embrace our journey here like immigrants do. So if you don't find a sense of community in the workplace in general, try to stick to other migrants. We always have to be together, supporting each other, being sisters and having each other's back. So obviously we don't have family here, but you will also find amazing friends who will become your family. And yeah, they are mostly migrants too. So we should always be in community with them. And yeah, never give up. Never give up. It can be very scary at the beginning, but trust me, you'll find your way. Things will get better and better. You'll get used to it. And you know, at the end, if you look back, you will see it was all worth it.
In India, the sex workers I met taught me that the first step towards revolution is the revolution of self-worth. That we cannot fight the world if we haven't fought with ourselves. The only thing that matters to us is how we see ourselves. Sex workers are not a monolith or an entity to be summed up. We are diverse and don't move as one. Our lived experiences do not have to be the same for us to be acknowledged or respected. We have all migrated and left our homes for diverse reasons. Just like our identities, our stories are complex. We speak in more than one language. Like our names, our words don't rhyme the same. Our struggles are shared, but our struggles are not the same. No longer are we going to wait for someone to pass us the mic. No longer are we waiting for someone to save us. No longer will we let anyone decide how our words should sound. We speak clearly. We affirm we are here to take space. We urge everyone from in and out of the industry to listen, to listen.
Race matters.
Race matters.
Race matters.
Race matters.
Race matters.
Race matters.
Race matters.